Let me remind all of ourselves to cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of what we call bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. I think if we reflect on the importance of spirituality or Dharma in our own life, I think we will see why that is an important part of our individual life or personal life. Now, if you ask the reason why spirituality or Dharma is important in our own individual personal life, it's just because we all do not want any kind of pain, problem, and suffering. That being said, that we encounter or experience many unwanted pains and problems. So we do not want suffering, we want to be free from suffering, but we run into suffering. So that being the situation in which we find ourselves in, now I think it's important for us to investigate how come we run into suffering which we don't want. What brings us suffering? What is cause? What causes suffering in our life? Now, as we investigate our life situation, what really brings suffering to us, we can see that other sentient beings or other people are not to be blamed for what we experience in our life. They are not the causes of our suffering or pain. And not only the sentient beings, but all inanimate phenomena or objects, we cannot blame them for what we experience in our life, because they are not responsible for the experiences of our life. So when we engage in that kind of what we call analysis, what brings suffering to us that we don't want in our life, now we started to eliminate all other factors which cannot bring suffering to us. And as I just mentioned, other people, other sentient beings, they are not the causes of our suffering. We cannot blame them for our suffering. We cannot blame inanimate phenomena or objects as causes of our suffering. But what really is causing suffering in our life, if we deeply look in that matter, what we can see is that it is our own individual actions we call karma, our own individual karmas are the real causes of our experiences. So that's why we often talk about what is called the ripening results. That is a technical term in Tibetan called namin, ripening results of karmic actions that we ourselves create and accumulate. Now when we say that what we experience in our life are the ripening results of karmic actions that we ourselves have created and accumulated, and here of course at the moment we are focused more on the miseries of life or the suffering in our life, we do not necessarily mean that what we do here and now in this life is what brings us suffering. You know, what we really need to understand is that broader perspective on karma, that what we did in our past lives, that's what we did as individuals. So those negative karmas ripen upon us in this life, and many of them bring unwanted pains and problems in this life to us. And then if we wonder, how did we accumulate so many negativities in our past life? You know, why did we do that? What made us do, such negativities? After all, we don't want to do negativities and we don't like the suffering results. Now, as we look into that matter, what we can see is the way we create and accumulate negative karmic actions is when we are influenced by our deluded states of minds we call delusions, or in Sanskrit it's called klesha or nyurmong in Tibetan. So when we look within our own mind, we will find numerous forms of delusion within us. And at the deepest level, if you will, what we see is ignorance. We call avidya in Sanskrit, or maripa. And from ignorance arises other forms of delusion, such as attachment, lust, clinging, anger, and you just name it. Now, when any of these delusions pop up in our mind, it acts as a motivating agent or a factor, motivation. So when we are motivated by any particular delusion, whether it is attachment or anger or jealousy or pride, and you just name it, then what we really end up doing karmically, if you will, is negativity, is a bad karma. Okay, so being motivated by a delusion or delusions, that we may hurt others. Okay? That we steal properties which belong to others, that we indulge in sexual misconducts, that we indulge in deception, we lie, we cheat, and we do other negativities being influenced by delusions. And after all, when we do these things ourselves, then, these negative karmic actions bring back negative results. So we have accumulated many negative karmas in our past lives, and maybe many of them are ripening now upon us, and many have, may ripen in the future. But in order to get rid of those negativities that we ourselves have accumulated, there's no other way, no other method or antidotes except cultivating spirituality or Dharma. So it is in this regard, Dharma is so important to us in our personal life, because after all, you know, we cannot, pay someone to purify ourselves of delusions. We cannot, use any kind of a power, you know, to knock out the delusions from within our mind, or status for that matter. We cannot use any external things to purify our mind of negativities and delusions. The only way to do that is through spiritual cultivation, through the practice of Dharma. So it is in this regard, Dharma is the method, the practice, the way out. And so it is so important in our life.
Tendi ane ta tendi meva zaya na pe tanda ke ngara niba ke mindu tere zo to uye no samni ta che ke na che go yamaris tere tensa ane sa thumbo la nengi ga ane che pe tamba tunzo ya nama ngaranso nangi ta ngaranso de tiba che ene ndu si ne yu yaris ina ta kona zo go rimbe rimbe diba pang gewa dumne ane sa thumbo la tsa yu yari tenzo nganzo ta migwe zambu chi reyes pa kyunga yu yamaris.
So as think about all these matters which I just laid out very briefly, one might feel kind of overwhelmed in some sense, like, oh my gosh, if I have created so many negativities in my past lives, I have so many delusions, well, then can I ever find freedom from all of my negativities and delusions? After all, this all seems like, you know, almost like an impossible thing, you know, to do. And we might feel very low self-esteem, if you will. We kind of undermine our own abilities to be able to counteract delusions and negativities. But this is where we can look at the great examples before us, the great realized beings, the holy beings that we have, that those who are on a very high levels of spiritual grounds or realization, at one point of time, they were exactly like us. The ones we consider very holy, and we get inspired, at one point of time in the past, they were just like us, deluded and full of negativities. But somehow, they changed their course of thinking and action. You know, so they, you know, started to do more positive actions, think more positively, and try to get rid of their negativities one by one, if you will, and slowly. So going through that gradual process, it is a process. There is no magic thing to happen like a boom in an instantaneous way. It is a process we have to go through, which they did. And if we follow the same process, if we follow in, you know, their footsteps, then we should be able to, and become like them. We should be able to purify ourselves of negativities and delusions. Of course, there is every possibility that we can purify ourselves of delusions and negativities, however strong they are, however many they are. We can become like the holy beings that we have, you know, before us as great examples. But all this progress and the transformation and the changes that I'm talking about, they are based upon certain, you know, if you will, indispensable conditions or factors. And just to lay out two of them, number one, we need to, study about Dharma and its practice. First, we have to have the knowledge and the information about practice. And number two, which is a more important condition or a factor, is we need to practice Dharma. We need to cultivate Dharma. It's not enough to know about it. It's, you know, yes, knowledge is prerequisite for practice. Knowledge is important. I'm not undermining it. But just to know so much and never to practice it means, you know, not much. Okay? So therefore, the theory and practice must go together, and practice is more important than theoretical knowledge of Dharma. So when I say practice, what I do mean is all of us, as I say, I always include myself in the audience. As I say we need to do practice, I mean that myself too, okay? As a speaker or a teacher, that we need in our everyday life try to stop doing negative karmas and try to purify our negative karmas that we have already done and try to do more positive karmas. So every day we get involved in actions doing that. So that action-oriented thing we engage in is called practice. Okay? So as I often say that it's wonderful to make those aspirational prayers, may such and such wonderful thing happen, but prayer alone is not enough. And just even think about this. Today we all do tremendous prayer, like may all the great things happen. Okay? But if we don't practice, tomorrow, basically, we are the same unchanged person or the people, right? We haven't changed a bit. Yes, we did a great prayer today, but tomorrow we are the same. You know, nothing changed inside us. So that means it's not working out. You know, so we need to put what we learn about Dharma into practice. That is called implementation. That is called cultivation. So when I talk about how our own karmic actions bring forth their results, of course I'm talking about we could apply that principle, if you will, to both good and bad karmas that we ourselves create and accumulate. Okay? And earlier maybe I focused more on the negativities and the negative results. But we can also think about the positive side as well. It works just the same way here. That, when we look at our precious human life, this is called fully endowed human form. And this is the best kind of life in samsara or cyclic existence. Okay? So because it has so many wonderful qualities and abilities to accomplish a great deal in whatever we want to do, and so all these things are the results of good karmas that we ourselves created and accumulated in the past. That we are so fortunate not to be in any of the three unfortunate states of rebirth, hell, hungry ghost, animal world, where there are so many limitations, and we may not be able to have spiritual progress much. So we look at our life, we have fully endowed human form, life with many enriching factors and many qualities. So these are the results of good karmas that we ourselves have accumulated. And anything that happens good in our life is basically a result of good karma. So we already have this wonderful human life, which is a great, form of life, especially for spiritual accomplishment. And this is definitely a result of good karmas that we ourselves did in the past. But of course, we would like to have the similar kind of life in our future existence or future lives. You know, we want to have this kind of a wonderful life so that we can carry on with our spiritual development and spiritual accomplishment. So if that's what we are seeking, we want on, then of course we need to create necessary positive karmic causes and conditions to be able to have this kind of life in the future. Not only that we will be reborn as a human being, but we will have a very healthy human life, not often get into sick or run into problems, that we would like to have very long and productive life. So all of these things must come from positive karmic actions that we ourselves need to create and accumulate.
You want to sit on a chair? On a chair?
What do you have there?
So that, the flat on me, compared to the COVID-19, the COVID-19 and the COVID-19, they're very, very good.
So we are looking at many different levels of existence and progression, if you will, towards freedom from many suffering. When we look within the different types of beings in samsara or cyclic existence, we talk about the beings in the three unfortunate states of rebirth. We talk about the beings in the higher states of existence, like the celestial beings or the divine beings called the devtas and the devis. And then we have the human life, which is again part of a good life. But all that being said, and comparatively speaking, our life is much, much better, compared to other forms of life in samsara for spiritual development. But that being said, but then we are also stuck in samsara. However wonderful our life is now, or great potentiality we have to accomplish anything spiritual, because we are focused on spirituality here, but that being said, that we are still stuck in samsara or cyclic existence. So our goal is not to have really another great life in samsara per se, but we want to get out of samsara. We want to exit samsara. And so that means we are seeking liberation or nirvana or freedom from the suffering of samsara. Our goal is to get out of samsara or cyclic existence, which is full of suffering, then it is essential for us to develop, if you will, aversion to the miseries in samsara, right? And so when we really develop aversion to the miseries in samsara, then that means we are getting really fed up in a sort of deep spiritual sense, positive. So now we want to get out. And it is in that kind of a situation which we genuinely seek nirvana or freedom from samsara. We don't want to get involved in worldly activities or samsaric activities. We don't want to get attached to samsaric things because we are really getting fed up about the samsaric nature, so we want to get out. So that's how we develop what we call aspiration seeking liberation or nirvana. So when we truly developed a sense of letting go everything that is samsaric, we don't have any attachment or clinging to samsara and samsaric things. And so when we develop that state of mind, then we also, that's where we develop the genuine aspiration of seeking liberation or freedom from samsara. Now we are really being very genuine about getting out of samsara.
That's the condition. 타베 공바 타바 타베 공판 삼 쓰는 님들부터 코에 내리 타베 체도 아니 아 다 람하고 숨냐네 시 지금 거를 제가 뜻이 야비 있는데 코에 내리 타투 그래서 그런 데부터 끼고 지은 거를
So as we think along that line, which I just explained, that we think about the suffering nature of samsara, and we develop true sense of whatever called renunciation, we don't want to get attached even slightest way to samsara and samsaric things, and we are genuinely seeking liberation from samsara. So with that kind of an aspiration or a state of mind, we call the determined wish to be liberated, or nginju in Tibetan, and then we find ourselves seeking the way or the method which will lead us to the nirvana or the freedom state. And this is where we see the importance of studying and practicing what is called the three higher trainings, labhasum, the three higher trainings, training in higher ethics or morality, training in higher concentration or samadhi, and training in higher wisdom. So through this practice of three higher trainings, now we are able to move forward, if you will, to the state of liberation, freedom from samsara. Of course, we are all thinking about one's own self, right? I want to be free from samsara, and this is what I want to do. So when we practice what is called training in higher ethics or morality or shila in Sanskrit, so what the ethics involves is really not doing negative karmic actions or negativities. Of course, there are, in the Buddhists, we have many different levels of ethics. There's a kind of a generic kind of ethics that everybody agrees with or follow. Then there are many specific levels of ethics that one might commit oneself to, as many of you know that already. So ethics is a foundation practice. When we observe ethics, then we do not do negative karmic actions, but we rather pursue that which is positive and constructive and beneficial. And therefore, we close the door to that rebirth or the unfortunate state of rebirth, and we open the door to fortunate states of rebirth.
Now, the thing is, and this same.
So as we practice training in higher samadhi or concentration, then we develop more control over our own state of mind. This is where the stability of the mind comes into play. But when we have a stable mind, or we have a control over our mind, then is our mind become very disciplined. If we want our mind to, focus on ethics, it will, because our mind has that stability developed, that discipline, if you will. So that's how concentration facilitates our practice of ethics. Now we really are mindful or aware of our ethics and practice. So based upon training in higher ethics and training in higher concentration, now when we practice training in higher wisdom, then wisdom is the real antidote to uproot delusions from within our mind. Remember earlier I said how we come to create a lot of negativities because being influenced by delusions, motivated by delusions. So delusions are inside our mind. So in order to uproot the delusions, to get rid of them completely, so we need to practice training in higher wisdom.
Only call
So I'm talking about these different levels of practice that we as individuals could do. I started off saying that, you know, how, you know, at a very sort of, if you would like to call it, basic level, you know, how we can prepare ourselves for better rebirth in the future. Okay, we would like to have a precious human life in the future. We can carry on with our practice and so forth, move forward in our spiritual growth and development. But then we said, okay, however wonderful this human life is, but if we keep on wishing just that much, we are still samsara, in samsara. We're stuck. Okay, we go round and round in samsara. Okay, we don't want that. We don't want to go round and round in samsara. We want to get out. Okay? So therefore, there's a higher level where we can individually seek the freedom from samsara called nirvana. Okay, that's what I just explained, how we cultivate the determined wish to be liberated, we practice the three higher trainings, and then we can get out of samsara. Now that's wonderful, right? Well, that being said, it involves some kind of selfish motives. Because basically we are thinking like, I want to be out of samsara. Okay, that's what I'm thinking. Okay, so I'm not thinking much about other people, or whatever happens to others, I mean, that's theirs, and I just want to be out of samsara. Well, can we do that? I mean, can we really forget about other sentient beings and really not be concerned about them and care about them, just me, you know? That doesn't sound right either, you know.
Lava kirijan avara nishabina, lava kirijan lava ti, nyamungi, ta tsawa tingi dada, nyambu, nguichi nyambu shingi dada, lava kirijan lava ri. So tsa, tira yushabina, tira rang, karasota, koi tsawa nabu se jie di, tabi kumpa togi, di ina te, siji hiyele nge hadu, teni, ane sha yushu the same shingi gonga ris.
So I mean, it's really important for us to understand how the whole process that I'm laying out to the state of freedom, it works out. Because deep down, at the deepest level, we have got ignorance. And from that arises many other forms of delusions that we have. So in order to purify ourselves of all the delusions, what we really need to do is we need to uproot ignorance. So what can really help us uproot ignorance, if you ask, it is the practice of wisdom. Because wisdom is the direct antidote. Okay? The way wisdom perceives reality as it is, the way ignorance perceives the reality to be, are completely different, antithetical to one another. So therefore, this antidote works perfectly. Okay, that's important to understand, you know, because that's the important part of getting out of samsara. So having said that, as I said, you know, can we really forget about other sentient beings and other people? You know, just be so concerned with one's own nirvana or liberation. Well, if we look from a very broader perspective and the connection we have with sentient beings and so forth, we really can't do that. You know, that's becoming too selfish, you know, here, self-centered. So we see the connection with all other sentient beings, and this is where now we see the need to cultivate the altruistic mind of enlightenment or bodhisattva's attitude, bodhicitta.
So
it is, you know, as we think along this line, we are going on a higher level again of thinking, and we said, okay, now I really would like to become a Buddha or complete enlightened being for the benefit of all other sentient beings. So this is where I would be able to benefit sentient beings just the way I want to. Okay, that's the highest goal, and this is where I don't become selfish and I'm really, you know, thinking about all other sentient beings. So we try to cultivate that kind of wonderful attitude called bodhicitta. Of course, you know, again, thinking altruistically is not enough. Okay, as you would say, you need to be action-oriented as well. So we need also to bring that altruism into action. So when I say that we need to bring the bodhicitta motivation into action, what I really mean is that we cultivate such state of mind called bodhicitta or bodhisattva's attitude, altruism. And then, you know, being motivated by that state of mind, we try to engage in positive actions. Whether it's a very insignificant positive action or whether it is a, you know, it is a great positive action, it doesn't matter. So the important thing is, whatever positive action we do, little or big, see that it is motivated by, it is grounded in bodhicitta. Now, why we really have emphasized so much about the motivation is because, as I explained the other day, that motivation makes a big difference in what we do and where we will be in terms of achieving our spiritual goals. What I'm trying to say here is that we all could be doing the same action or the same practice, but because of the different quality and the levels of our motivations, that the same action or the practice could lead us to different, you know, different results or different goals. So let me illustrate my point, giving you an example. Let's think of four practitioners who are doing the same practice. You know, they are reciting the same mantra, whether it is the, you know, Tara mantra, or let's say whether it's the Jnanasik mantra or Avalokiteshvara mantra. Okay, what they are reciting, that mantra recitation is just the same, right? It's the same deity. I mean, there's no slightest difference. Okay, but because of their different levels of motivation, you know, what they do might bring different results. Person A is motivated altruistically. He or she is thinking about all other sentient beings and thinks that, okay, I want to be fully awakened being, Buddha, for the benefit of all sentient beings. And with that kind of a mindset of motivation resides the Avalokiteshvara mantra. So this recitation of the mantra becomes a cause for this person to become a Buddha.
Tai nimba dige ani ngara ani te thabe gomba ta dungge chan yong de gum ta dungge te le thal khoe dungge le thag gum do te thaya che do kan de mi de ma de de sam se bi na ta ti a thabe jul chim bares na thaji chi bi jul ro thoya ma sanji gomba ta kin ro thoya ma.
Now the person B, you know, is seeking liberation from samsara, because the person B thinks that, you know what, I have too much of a suffering, I have got enough, I don't like suffering anymore, I don't want suffering anymore, so therefore I want to be free from suffering for good. Okay, that is person B's motivation, and then recites the Avalokiteshvara mantra. Okay, so this mantra recitation as a practice, as an action, you know, leads this person B to nirvana or liberation.
That me somebody any time do see a show it Sanji Kumato kid of Mangubashi, and it have a Kumato kid of Mangubashi. That was Shiva Shima, Nisol and John Doyati, Takali Kamudu, Nisol and John Mugia Cheto, Nisol and Michelle Cheto, and then.
And then the person C, you know, thinks this way, that I really don't want to have a bad rebirth in the next life. I don't want to go to hell. I don't want to go to hungry ghost world. I don't want to be born as a lesser kind of animal. I just don't want, okay? And I want a good rebirth, this kind of life again. Okay? And with that kind of a motivation, he or she recites the Avalokiteshvara mantra, the mantra of compassion. So in this case, because of the motivation, person C, you know, will find good rebirth in the future. So at least what he or she does, you know, constitute what we call spirituality or practice with that motivation. I do not want to be in a bad migration. I want to be in a good state of existence. And with that motivation, when one practices and does some action, good action, that fulfills, if you will, the minimal criteria of practice of dharma.
mi yiba tege ane tsendele ne mepa tang, na tsua mepa tang a tse rungpo yunga tang, je chenpo yunga tang daga nang iki ane tok kosan lep tere tata, keda chenpo yunga tere ke che tata samta tangne, kunung ta tangne chebege na ta kyur chinga marte, kyur yunga marte
Now let's think of person D, you know, who really wants to have a good life here and now, that I want to be really famous, I want to be rich, I want to, you know, have a long life, I don't want to get sick, you know, that really sucks. And so I just want a great life here and now, and with that kind of a motivation, you know, he or she recites the Avalokiteshvara mantra. Now this mantra recitation may bring these good results, but that has not even become what we call practice from our definitional point of view. This has not become even practice even. So this is not the dharma practice, you know, because of his or her motivation.
So the tatangi lose the gender was tambutigi kuno de jipi and it was you choose she be chimbichu chabrista.
So I just gave you these four different examples of different levels of motivation but doing the same practice. The first one has a bodhicitta motivation, you know, recites the Avalokiteshvara mantra, become what he or she does, becomes a Mahayana practice, become a cause to be a Buddha, and finds a complete enlightened state as a result. So second person is motivated, you know, to find nirvana or liberation, does the same practice, recite the Avalokiteshvara mantra. So that means with that motivation plus the recitation of the mantra equal to nirvana. So that's what we call the intermediate level practice. Okay. And then the third person has the motivation to find good rebirth in the next life and does the same practice of the action, recite the mantra. So with that motivation plus the action leads to good rebirth. So this has become what we call the initial level practice. And the fourth person, the whole motivation is very ulterior motives, you know, want to have all kind of success here and now, want to become famous and beautiful and rich and, you know, powerful and all that. So basically he or she is motivated by what we call worldly concerns. Okay, worldly attitudes, and although he or she does the same practice of action, but that does not become even a practice, okay, spiritual. So that's not even a Dharma practice. So as I explain those things and laying out these simple examples before you, what I'm really trying to get across to you is all of us, you know, whether we do our meditation, see that we are, you know, our motivation is correct motivation and, if you will, the best kind of motivation. And when we sit and do prayers, when we do our sadhanas, recite our prayers, or that we come here to listen to teaching or receive teaching, we must first think about our motivation, correct our motivation, and then participate in all such actions and practices. So to make my point clear again one more time is that all of us are here in the same monastic hall. I'm giving the same teaching, I'm the same teacher speaking to all of you, but the difference of the levels of motivation that we are here sitting, listening to the same teacher, same teaching, in the same location, we could have, you know, totally different results. What we are doing could be totally different. So therefore, what I mean is, we really need to look individually within our own mind and so think about our motivation, the type of motivation we cultivate.
So wan rei da mari da ma wan nang ki ke kuin wo diang ma jin da na na ya ti wan rei da mari ni zu re chung ki ke pe kuin wo diang wei ma ju na ani wan te to de mo ni zu re ba de ni ge la da de ni ngu mong gu yo che de wan ju bi ne chen da yo da to ye ji de yo ma te.
And as you know that, we participate in many tantric empowerments or initiations of Abhishekhs, you know, we really want to give great blessings and all of that. But having said that, motivation plays a very significant role. Because tantric empowerments is part of the Mahayana teaching book, right? So we could be at the initiation, and we are receiving the same initiation from the same Vajra master, but because of our motivation, in the first place, it may not even become initiation at all. Okay, we could be thinking about, like, I want to be successful here and now in my whatever, things we have on our mind. Then it looks like we are at the initiation, we are receiving initiation, looks beautiful, looks like spiritual, but inside when we think in terms of substance, it is probably zero. There's nothing happening, okay? But when we talk about the motivation, you know, we are really talking about the motivation from both sides, both the teacher and the students. Okay, if a teacher gives Dharma teaching without proper motivation, what he teaches does not become Dharma. If the students listen to the teaching with ulterior motives, the Dharma teaching does not become Dharma teaching for that person. The same goes with the initiations. If the master is giving initiation with the wrong motivation, hypothetically speaking, it won't become initiation to begin with. Okay, so this is why we all have to really understand the significance and essentiality of developing right kind of motivation as we do practice. Now let me quiz you here. Many people are receiving the Zambala initiation. Zambala is, do you know Zambala? What kind of a deity is Zambala? Yeah, what kind of a deity is that? Yeah, it is the god of wealth. Why are so many people interested in receiving that initiation?
I don't know. Good motivation. Zambala wants you to thank you. Yes. 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 Yes.
Well, I mean, all the things I explained about the four different levels of motivation could apply to attending a Zambala initiation, right? One could be attending it with altruistic motivation, then that really becomes a cause to be Buddha. One could be attending it with motivation to find liberation, okay, that becomes an intermediate level practice. And one could attend the Zambala initiation with wish to find a good rebirth in the future, at least that becomes a practice of Dharma. But one could be attending it just to become rich and famous and all other, worldly stuff. And that may not become, anything spiritual. So, I mean, if somebody just thinks, okay, if I get the Zambala initiation, then there will be just kind of cascades of the dollars, on me, and okay, that's what I wanted. Then it is a questionable thing. So as I often do at the beginning of this teaching, going back to continue from the text, I say these things with the intention that this will be helpful to all of us. For some of us it could be reminders, for others this could be new teaching and information. So because we are quite a pretty good, big group, right? So, some have been attending the teaching for a long time, others are very new here. But I hope that the things I just shared is, helpful and beneficial to all of us.
Tangaran somalole pene jitin pe anita chi tsin da khang ta tsin da khang sha ja ta ata ga na gi chi dan du ni so si ya ta sta sam ta ma bu chi ra zo khong yo ra bas
If we take a moment and look within ourselves, I think we can see that a lot of our thoughts and worries and concerns are about, this life and what we want to accomplish in this life in a worldly sense and what we want to do. So a lot of concerns and worries are about how can I, take care of my family and friends and nurture them or protect them, and then how can I defeat the people called enemies or whatever. Okay? And so we are kind of, involved in that way of mentality and thinking, and then, get involved in many actions and activities. So why are we, find ourselves in that mindset that we are so attached to what we call near and dear ones, friends and relatives and all that, and then we really are not, we are very indifferent to what we call strangers, who are they, by the way, right? And then we think like, oh, well, these are the troublemakers or my enemies or people I don't like, so why do we find ourselves thinking in such what we call categorized and discriminated ways, in a biased way, if you think. This is not something just started in this lifetime. We have developed so much habituated thinking with this line of thinking from many past lives. Okay, we are so developed kind of intimacy with this mindset, deluded way of thinking, that it seems like a very automatic system within us. It's like our second nature. We don't need to be taught, like get attached to friends and relatives, or hate the people we don't like, or just don't care about who the heck these are. Of course, Krishna would never use the word heck, but to get the thing off, make point. Because of that deluded habit, thinking pattern, it perpetuates in this life, and this looks like a second nature, very easy, this is the normal way, isn't it? After all, this looks like normal.
Here like this says, but it comes up.
Yes. But, yes.
Then this one. I think on the condition is what I said. And then, show them a look, conduction. Conduction. And then, checking the machines. Do you want to remember this?
So if we are puzzled in some sense that why we find ourselves doing it such an easy way and without needs much effort, looks like a second nature, automatic system is operating inside us, why is this happening? Well, here great Aditya tells us it's because we have developed less familiarity, intimacy with spiritual way of thinking, spirituality. Okay, we have developed more intimacy and familiarity with the deluded way of thinking and biased way of thinking. So that's why. It's just the habit kicking in. So now what we really need to do is we want to, interrupt this habituated way of thinking. This is a cognitive process inside us. So now we want to interfere with this habituated, deluded way of thinking by bringing Dharma or spiritual way of thinking inside us. Okay? So when we started to think in a spiritual way, in a Dharma way, and develop more familiarity and intimacy with this way of thinking, then slowly, slowly, that thinking becomes an antidote to counteract the deluded way of thinking. So that's how we can change our pattern or the way of thinking. So here the Aditya tells us that, once we look at our mind, we are watching our mind and we have all these, deluded thoughts and concerns and worldly attitudes and all things popping up in our mind, and we see this, but now if we don't interrupt this way of thinking, well then there's no point of being in a solitude. There's no point of being at a monastery. you know, and because it's just perpetuating our deluded way of thinking.
Tadi rang sem tele sem de masung ba sem sem jangin to ne gitin pi ene na ba to ba zo kan kan shuju ta karang tema na ja du se ne ene tele nyembo ma ma tem ba ste ma to ma tem ta tem ma to to se te nyembo ma tem ba se ne a de bi na ne gomba na ne ki gembe ti ta ba yon ki ta re ta shar da ta den zin che yo mar ba so.
And here Arish tells us that, you know, being in a solitude, and if we look at our mind, and we have all these deluded thoughts and habituated way of thinking come up, the thoughts pattern, we need to interrupt it with the Dharma thinking. Now, if we don't do that, we let the thoughts perpetuate and continue within ourselves, then there's really no purpose or point of being in a solitude. Okay? Then we are basically living like the birds and animals in the forest. You know, they are there. That's the environment, and we are just basically same in a solitude in a forest, you know, and really not doing anything different from them. Because what we need to do as a spiritual practitioner is find antidotes, apply antidotes to counteract our deluded way of thinking.
So same so yet, gamba na mani ngarang so tan dagan na ipe tongsi ngan dengki yena ya. So same masung ba same jangil tongbi yena. Ani tu ta de ne pe kibo chadi ngaris. Same so yet ke kibo chadi ngaran somal.
So it's very important for all of us to what we call to be mindful of what we are thinking, and as we would say, to protect our mind from deluded, habituated way of thinking, whether we are in a solitude or whether we are living in a community or in a city, you know, it doesn't matter. What is important for all of us is to, how to say it, to safeguard our mind. And as we are, thinking about this matter, and you know, if we somehow think that, oh yeah, I need to do something, but there are too many worldly thoughts, I'm really habituated, so I will maybe do later on, you know, I'll find a good time perhaps, you know, then I'll sit and then, you know, counteract them. But do not procrastinate to do that at a later time, because procrastination is a form of laziness. Okay, because it's always like later time, you know, we push it some another time as it does going to come, and we are going to do it, and we mean it, you know, we often we don't. So, you know, don't, you know, as you say, procrastinate, you know, applying antidotes to our deluded, habituated way of thinking. So when we have the opportunity, we should seize the opportunity to do that. You know, do not procrastinate to do that, because after all, there's so much uncertainty in the future. We really don't know. We will find a time to do that, or we will really do it, you know. If something that we can do now, why we don't try at least to do it rather than push it to some another time? And because future is full of uncertainties. And to illustrate that point here, Arisha gives us an example. I think we saw this last week. He says that if a blind person has a jewel in his or her hand, or a diamond, okay, for some reason the diamond slips from the hand, then it would be really hard for the blind person to get the diamond back, because he can't see anything. Now it, you know, there's so many rocks and pebbles around, you know, all things, you know, feel like same, and that would be hard. So like that, once we lose the opportunity, don't seize the moment, then it would be very hard to find that moment again to do the practice.
No loss. Tight, very young, as a day. nyale sebi tunas ane tunayans lotang dawa madang par lotang nyamle singi to ane nga nyale nyamle se ne lon daga sen dawa daga chi se ne peta tende ge dangji amres te kare lotang dawa kasi sumi ge cheba ke amres ane togo chi ju rang sem ane rang ge lotop chi ju Kariki ya selo ya se kari tando ta de takisha kuresu kana no.
And more importantly, he Arisha is telling us that we need to, as we do practice, we engage in practice for whatever length of time, see that whether there is any kind of what we call progress we make within our mind, and if there is any substantial progress in our way of thinking, in our attitude, positive, because that's really the criteria, if you will, to judge whether our Dhamma practice is succeeding or not. Okay? So do not get into the habit of counting how many days I have been doing practice, or how many months and how many years. That statistic is not important if really not much substantive changes is taking place within ourselves. Because after all, you know, there has to be what we call inner transformation, inner changes. If there is something like that happen, it doesn't matter how long we have been practicing. That statistic is not important. But on the other hand, we might be able to say, like, I've been practicing for ages or some years, but inside not much happened. Well, then, in a sense, we failed, okay, our practice.
So the tente ngaransa kicha machagi var kare esena kachi samna ta ngi ani pe chue su yak ngo su ne lon da ka se chi su sa da lo sum pe cham den ki na lo sum da de li de de te lo rang ke yo ma es rang ge ji la to go de kong pe de ro gu yo ma to lo dan da wa ka se su mi chi ke yi ma vi
I think here's an important message for all of us, you know, how, you know, sometimes, you know, we might get in the habit of like, oh, when did I really connected myself with the Dharma? When was that year I started? Oh, it has been many years I have been in Dharma. Well, but then we have to look inside, have I made any progress or changes inside? Way, you know, and that's more important thing to do. But otherwise, you know, sometimes how often we are more into like counting like, oh, did you do the 3-year, 3-month retreat? Wow, you did that? Yeah, but, you know, has anything changed in the mind, really, within 3 years, 3 months, whatever? Okay, if not, well, that is a big question, you know. And so that's what I'm talking about. So do not get too much carried away by those statistics of how many days and months and years and, you know, have been in Dharma or at the center. But we have to really look within ourselves to what extent I have changed myself for a better person, better way of thinking, positive way of thinking.
So, sir,
So whether our practice is becoming effective or not, whether we are succeeding in what we practice, we really have to look within ourselves and see whether there is any, you know, what called progress in our way of thinking, in our attitude and so on. So after all, the criteria by which we can evaluate ourselves, whether our practice is becoming effective or not, we are succeeding in what we practice, whether the Dharma is really making sense, you know, or not, is we have to look within our own mind. Okay, and as we look in our mind, we say that, okay, now before I had too many other delusions, now at least some of them have got decreased in the intensity or minimized. Well, there is a progress. Okay, before I used to do too many negative things involved, but at least I've cut down, you know, a certain amount, okay? I haven't been able to stop it completely, which is rather hard, but I have changed in some way. But that's great. There is a substantive change, and Dharma is affecting us, and we are progressing. Okay? So that's very important, and we don't need to ask people, right? Do you think I've been going to Dharma Center for a long time, now you think I'm really changing or succeeding? No, because we see the result inside us. Okay, we don't need somebody's comments or the feedback here,
you know.
Okay, so let's see me tell you this, like say, one of us said, okay, I have been practicing patience, okay, tolerance, shanti. And then one person says, okay, really you are? Okay, that's what wonderful. And just, you know, give a nice head. And here we go like, okay, let me teach you, you know, show my skill, you know. Now think of that, you know, is that a pretty picture of being a practitioner of patience? So if you really mean that we are practicing patience, then it doesn't matter even if the other person hits us really hard, our state of mind should remain unperturbed, disturbed, right? We shouldn't lose the, you know, coolness in mind and the peace of mind. But if somehow we get disturbed and we are going to, retaliate against the person, well, there goes the patience. Okay, there goes our claim to be a practitioner. So if you really want to be a practitioner or practicing patience or tolerance, then we have to be like this story we have about a great practitioner in ancient India called Brahmin by the name of Tangso Sabamala. He says I'm the practitioner of patience. And that's how he would say it, and then one day the local king said, okay, if you are a practitioner of patience, let me test you how good you are. And then he started to cut, you know, off the limbs of his body. Okay, are you a practitioner? Okay, there you go. Your arm is chopped. Who are you now? Well, I'm a practicing patient. There you go, another one, you know. And he remained completely undisturbed and never lost his, you know, peace of mind.
Test Marida.
The whole story has it, you know, where I said the local king tested him, because it's not a testing. The story has that one day the local king went with his entourage for a hunting trip into the forest. Okay, so probably the king and the males and all got lost into hunting, and all his queens somehow strolled into the forest, and they ended up, you know, with this practitioner of patience. And somehow they got so impressed by the practitioner, and, you know, so the queens were surrounding, just listening to this man, and this is where the king came, you know, very mad and angry. So the king was looking for his queens, and then when he found that all the queens were, you know, listening to this man, And you know, then the king thought, wow, this is a sweet talker here, and he's just kind of deceiving all my queens, and he didn't like it at all. So he got mad. He just, you know, took the sword out of and he just rushed towards this person and then chopped his limbs.
Then who are you, Zinta?
So then the king said, you know, who are you? That's a nice way of saying. Probably he said, who the heck are you? And he said, well, I'm a meditator of patience, okay?
So the condition is
So he, like would cut one limb and then ask the same question, who are you now? And then he get the same answer, who are you now? He chopped another part of the limb and he get the same answer. So then when a king was kind of at the end, you know, he changed his mind. He was kind of fascinated by this person who didn't lose his temper at all. And he said, you know, I'm so sorry, and he regretted for his action. He said, I amputated you completely, you know, so what do I do now, you know? And then this, you know, meditator said, you know, that's all right, don't worry about me. You know, and he was already a bodhisattva on a higher level of realization. He said, you know, what I can do is I can invoke the power of truth, you know, because practitioners at such time, they can make a statement, you know, it says that what, and then I can get back, you know, regain all my, you know, chopped limbs. So it's okay, don't worry about me. I should be fine. So this is how this Brahmin or the meditator patience invoked the power of truth. He said, you know, you chopped, you know, my different amputated me, you know, each piece. And during each of those moments, if I remained unperturbed, never lost calmness of my mind, but the power of that state of mind, may I be able to restore all my limbs. You know, that's how he invoked the power of truth.
So that day told him, Helm Jenny, try to any Tanda, Nalitore Tangel, Ingi, Yanadi, Tivati, Nagika, Mopan, Masaji, and Tran, and any choose Jordan Tan, Kuranki, Tamaripi, Limited Kay.
And so he invoked the power of truth and he was able to restore all his, you know, amputated limbs. And then he said, I want to dedicate this merit for you, that in the future when I become Buddha, and may I be able to see you again, and I will ask you a question this time, you will be answering, and by the power of my dedication, may I be able to, you know, cut your delusion piece by piece, cut off. So it said that, you know, later, this is the story of Shakyamuni Buddha's past, and when he became a Buddha, or he at least enacted the role of becoming a Buddha, in one of the, his first five disciples, there's a, you know, a disciple called Punshiko Dinaya. This is a Sanskrit name, Indian person. That, so he was said to be that person, the, you know, the angry king.
So that Kong and the Chu Tambu Demba Yi Chu Sun is an any corner, the already tongue and the cities and any.
So during that, you know, first sermon, then the Shakyamuni Buddha started to ask a series of questions to Kunshiko Dinaya, and by asking those questions, he was able to help him, eliminate certain portion of his delusions. And within that one sitting, teaching session, it is said that Kunshiko Dinaya, you know, was able to free himself completely from delusions. He became an arahat.
That's very...
So that is the greatness and the benefit of practicing patience.
No. Chisi nima zir, nina shenga zir tong yin do.
Tong do.
Tong sari.
He never zir.
Yesterday, 2:30 is he? Pass away.
So these both are like people who passed away or somebody sick? Okay. Another, is this a sick person or a dead person? Okay.
This you are titan. And they are Muzi Lotto Yingbari Morantante Desert, the Las Vegas Navy.
Yes.
The Robing Baba Tondua.
Alright.
Johnson.
Alamin Jones.
That's Lotto Ying and Lucini.
We have some prayer requests here. And one problem many of you might recall, Lara Brooke, you know, who was here for many years, and she was secretary at TDL, and then she moved, you know, some time ago back home up north, and her dad, his name is Ross Brooke, and he was sick for a while, really terribly sick, and so I think yesterday about 2:30 he passed away. So we request prayers for him. And also, Kishava says that his another student, Robin, who lives in Las Vegas, her dad, by the name of John, passed away too. So we have two students whose dads passed away. And then we have John Madrid, as I just checked, he's not passed away, but sick. So we also request prayer for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who have passed away, we send our prayers and thoughts that may they be able to find a good rebirth again, and so be able to meet with Dharma and carry on with the spiritual journey. And those who are sick, we send our prayers for them to be able to recover soon. So I request everybody to join in doing those prayers.
Let
us dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great holy masters, wherever they are in any part of the universe, live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practices